Dr. Arthur Perry, he's one of the top plastic surgeons. He's got offices in Manhattan, New Jersey. You know, and he's been doing a show here on WOR for years and years and years. Very popular show and a great plastic surgeon. Everybody has questions on this subject, so he's the guy to ask. Dr. Arthur Perry.
John, the public wants to know.
The public doesn't give a damn.
And I went to his office, and I said, look at my face. And he goes, yeah, look at your face. We're going to do with your face. What can you do with his face? I go like that. I swear to God. I go, look at this. I'm getting old. I said, I want to maybe you could fix it up a little bit.
Dr. Oz, are you there?
I'm here, Arthur, and I want to again applaud you, having worked with you on a book and numerous other activities.
You want to talk to Arthur Perry, the best in plastic surgery.
Remarkable knowledge, but also your grace at delivering content, which is why it's been a blessing to have you on my show so many times.
When I was a resident at the University of Chicago, we had a...
That means you're smart.
As a really, really gifted physician, I want to pay you the highest tribute I can give to a surgeon, which is when people come to you, they don't come for an operation, they come for an opinion. And that's why I trust you with my friends and relatives.
I didn't realize we were going to get the Michael Jordan of plastic surgeon. 90210 bows to this guy.
And welcome. This is Dr. Arthur Perry. This is What's Your Wrinkle right here on WOR. I hope you're all having a wonderful weekend. Is it one of the great weekends of the year? It really is. Despite that little shower we had earlier today, this is... A wonderful weekend. I celebrate the summer. I'm so cold during the winter. I never complain when it's hot out, and it is hot. And today, the UV index, you knew where I was going with this, was 9.8. That's almost as high as it gets, although tomorrow it's 9.8. Sorry, it was 9.1 today, excuse me. And on Monday, it's 10.0. That's a scorcher. That really is. That means if you're out in the sun more than 20 minutes, unprotected sun with a UV index of 10, you will fry. And that means, what does it mean? Well, you could develop sunburn, of course. You could get premature wrinkles. You could develop skin cancers. And it doesn't take a lot of sun exposure to develop a skin cancer because really most of your exposure was before age 18. And it's a cumulative effect. That means your body will always remember the damage that happened before. And it doesn't take much when you're older to send you over the edge. And all of a sudden, you see this thing growing on your skin. And lo and behold, it's a skin cancer. So sunscreen, that is your answer. It's not too late to use sunscreen. An SPF 15 is the minimum. And you want one that has zinc oxide or titanium dioxide. And coincidentally, I have one of those. It's called Daytime. And Daytime is the SPF 23 sunscreen. And we're giving away bottles of Daytime today because that's actually just to callers. People who have good questions for me, you know, the ones that have been keeping you up at night, well, give me a call, 800-321-0710, and we'll send you home with a bottle of Daytime. And that is what you need when the when the UV index is over 3. And one of my patients a couple weeks ago pointed out to me, she said, thank you so much, because I know the dermatologists say wear sunscreen every day of the year regardless. That's senseless. It really is. Sorry to my dermatology I almost said something. But my dermatology colleagues, not the convicts, the colleagues, yeah, they say wear it every day. You don't need it if the UV index is under 3. And pretty much for the almost every day, unless it's really, really cloudy out, you know, from April on until end of October, the UV index will be over 3. So just go ahead and put it on every day. And my Daytime goes on the skin first after you wash your face or after you get out of the shower. Put it on. Let it dry. Let it act as your foundation. It gives a nice sheen to your skin, a smoothing sheen. And then you put powder, makeup, preferably the pressed powder, not the loose powder. It's better for your lungs. And you put it on and go about your business. That is all you need. All right. Today, we're going to talk about the damage that you have gotten and you have if you're 50 years old or 60 years old. You spent a lot of time in the sun. I know you have. Regardless of your skin color, you have sustained a lot of damage to your skin. So my average patient is a 50 to 70-year-old woman. That is probably the most of what I have come to my practice. I do a lot of facial rejuvenation. And I see women every single day in my New Jersey office and soon back in New York. I haven't made that announcement yet, but we'll be back. I know I'm going to be in Tribeca in the winter, but we're trying to get a space before that. But I see women every day. And they come in with the constellation of symptoms. Symptoms of intrinsic aging, that is the aging that your body does, the aging that you sustain, even if you've never been out in the sun or never smoked, never been subjected to pollution, you will still age. We know that. That's called intrinsic aging. And then there's the extrinsic aging, and that's what you can control. You can't control your genes too well. Not yet, anyway. Soon, but not yet. Although Michael Roizen will tell you can control your genes with things like diet. But let's say you've been dealt the hand of cards. You know, you've got the genes and you've got light skin, you've got sun damage already. What can you do going forward to decrease the extrinsic aging? And that's the aging caused by cigarette smoking, the aging caused by sun damage, and the aging caused simply by living in Manhattan and the surrounding areas and being exposed to the pollution that we're exposed to every day. And if you don't think so, just go over, let's say, the entryway to the Holland Tunnel and look at the haze around New York. You're breathing it in and your skin is being subjected to that haze. And it's a toxic amount of pollutants, of carcinogens. It's doing bad things to your skin. So what do you do? You come to my office and you say, look, I'm 55 years old. Help me. And so many women do. And a lot of people come to my office and say, I have a very specific thing I want treated. I don't like this little thing that's hanging off of my nose. I saw someone with a very large growth off of her nose this week. And she was very specific. She didn't care about the overall aging of her face. She just cared about that. So we'll take care of that. A lot of women come in and say, I just hate the appearance of my eyelids. You know, my upper eyelids, I've got extra skin. I've got fat of my upper eyelids. What can you do about that? But I do have a lot of women who come in and they say, you know, I'm looking in the mirror, beginning to see my mother in the mirror. I love my mother, right? You know this story. I told it to Oprah and she looked at me. Yeah, I love my mother, but I don't want to look like her. And when I look in the mirror at age 50 and age 60 and age 70, you see the final memories of your mother. You do, and your mother was an older woman. You love her, but you don't want to look like her. And so a plastic surgeon will take your overall complaint that you're aging. And what I do is I do a one-hour consultation, and we go through a mirror in your hand, good light on you, and we brutally go through your face from the hairline on top to the top of your chest. We go through. So now, your aging is divided into all sorts of things, wrinkles, fine wrinkles, and jowls, and sagging. So we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But the number here at WOR, remember, this is a call-in show, so feel free to give me a call, 800-321-0710. We are going to be talking about a comprehensive approach to facial rejuvenation, from skincare to surgery and to the little ancillary things. How about your nose thickens? It does. The cartilage thickens as you get older. Your earlobes elongate. They wrinkle. We're going to talk about that. This show is dedicated to facial rejuvenation, so give me a call. Yeah, you can call me about your liposuction if you're interested, but today we're going to talk about facial rejuvenation. And who am I if this is the very first time you're listening? You're driving in your car on the turnpike. You're coming over the George Washington Bridge. You're ready to rejoin society and go to the restaurants this evening without a mask. You don't have to have a mask anymore if you've been vaccinated. And that's a wonderfully liberating thing, isn't it? So you're in your car, you're listening, you're flipping around the stations. There's absolutely nothing on Saturday evening except this show. You found it. And so I'm a board-certified plastic surgeon. I've trained at Harvard for general surgery, at Cornell, right there on 68th Street, for burns. I did a burn fellowship there, and I don't do burns anymore. I do cosmetic surgery, but what a great education that was at Cornell, the largest burn unit in the world, and what an incredible experience. After burn surgery, I did my residency in plastic surgery at the University of Chicago, and then I did a facelift fellowship at Miami with a couple of great plastic surgeons, and then I joined the faculty of the medical school at Robert Wood Johnson. I was full-time for a while. That didn't last too long. I like the private world, and so I've been in private practice since then for 30-something years. But I teach. I'm on the faculty of Columbia. I'm an adjunct associate professor at Columbia University and a clinical associate professor at Rutgers in New Jersey. So that's who I am. That's who you're listening to. I'm board certified in plastic surgery, not dermatology, not ear, nose, and throat, not ophthalmology. No, I'm a plastic surgeon. All right, so Being that I'm a plastic surgeon, we're going to talk about everything from skin care, which is important for a plastic surgeon to understand. And a lot of them don't. They really don't. Because a lot of plastic surgeons say, you know what, let's let my esthetician deal with that. Let's let a dermatologist deal with that. But the truth is, if you don't take care of your skin, how do you expect me to do a good facelift? If you have, you know, old appearing skin and splotchy pigmentation and rough skin and lots of capillaries. And that's what happens as you get older, because after age 30, it's downhill. It really is. You know, you don't like to think that, but yeah, if you're a 30-year-old, it is downhill. Your skin is aging at a rate of 1% per year. That means it thins at a rate of 1% per year. You lose 1% of the collagen. What is collagen? You hear that word being thrown around all the time. Collagen is the structural layer of your skin. It's what holds you together. It's what your shoes are. If you've got leather shoes, they're 100% collagen. And if you've got a leather jacket or a pocketbook, that's collagen. That's what it is. It's a very tough material, but it does thin as you get older. So when you are, let's say, 80 years old, and you look at your arms and you say, my goodness, I can actually see the veins and the muscles through my skin, because my skin is now 50% thinner than it was when I was 20. Well, we're going to talk today about how to improve the quality of your skin with skincare, how to improve the wrinkles, the fine wrinkles, with non-invasive procedures, and how to improve the big things, the sagging jowls, the turkey gobbler in the neck, the big things, and that requires surgery. I'm board-certified plastic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry. This is What's Your Wrinkle? Right here on WOR. The phone number, 800-321-0710. We'll be back after these words. Did you know that most skincare is useless, even fraudulent, and often toxic? I'm plastic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry. I needed great skincare for my patients, but really could not find products that dramatically improve skin health. So I went to the books, and I created a line of skincare that reduces the appearance of wrinkles and truly rejuvenates skin. I want everyone to try my products, and so for a limited time, I'm offering my Beauty in a Bottle Nighttime Serum at a great price. Normally, this is $65, but for WOR listeners, it's $40 plus shipping. Nighttime contains vitamin C and A, fruit acids, antioxidants, and skin brighteners. That's all you need for beautiful skin. It's so simple that your friends and relatives will be asking you, what are you doing to look so good? Go to drperrys.com, that's drperrys.com, or give us a call at 844-DR-PERRY. Use the WOR20 code for the discount. To learn more, listen every Saturday evening, 6 p.m., right here on WOR.
You're listening to What's Your Wrinkle with Dr. Arthur Perry. What's Your Wrinkle?
And we are back. This is Dr. Arthur Perry. This is What's Your Wrinkle right here on WOR. We're broadcasting from central New Jersey today. You know, I like to do the show from all over the place. Next week, I think it'll be the Hamptons next week, maybe Beverly Hills the week after. I like traveling around and seeing how the rest of the world does cosmetic surgery. You should see Beverly Hills. I'll tell you, it's just terrible out there. It really is. You know, that's the land of the duck lips. That's the land of the liquid facelift. Have you heard of that term? Well, that's one of my pet peeves. To create a liquid facelift and try and elevate the skin with filler requires so much filler that it distorts your features. It's one of my pet peeves. People come into my office and they look bizarre, because they've had these liquid facelifts, or they've gone to someone, usually not a plastic surgeon. Usually it's one of these people that took one of these two-hour courses. There are many of them. They give really nice-looking diplomas. I think the shorter the course, the bigger the diploma. That's what draws people in who are not qualified to do this. They're legally allowed to do it because they're physicians. There are also some dentists that are doing it. I love the dentists filling cavities and whitening teeth, but come on now. Come on. You know what I'm talking about. Who is the best person to do cosmetic surgery? Well, it's obviously a cosmetic surgeon, someone certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery. Like I am, like most of my guests on this show have been, when I have a plastic surgeon, they are certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery. All right. Well, anyway, today we're talking about you as you grow older, what happens to your skin. We talked about the aging that occurs, the wrinkles that you get from the intrinsic aging, that's your own genes, and the extrinsic aging from cigarette smoking. Those of you who smoke, stop right now. It's a losing battle. Besides, you're killing yourself, you're also making yourself look terrible with cigarette smoke. And it's really very difficult to reverse that unless you quit smoking. And if you are a smoker, I personally, and most plastic surgeons, will refuse to do a facelift on smokers. And the reason for it is very upsetting. It's a 20 times higher complication rate. 20 times, not twice, but 20 times higher complication rate in smokers. And really, the only people that lose skin in a facelift, and you say, what? Lose skin? Yeah. If I lift the skin on your face, pull it real tight, and try and make you look better, it works very well in most people. But if you're a smoker, no, it's not going to work. I have to pull either not a lot at all, or just don't do the operation, which is a better way to do it. So I turn smokers down. And if you're a diabetic, I can't do it either if you're a diabetic. You cannot have a facelift. I mean, some people will do it. There are plastic surgeons. If you shop around, they're willing to do those things. But if you're a diabetic, particularly if you're on insulin, I mean, look, if you're a past diabetic, if your hemoglobin A1C is in the fives, if you're not taking insulin or glucophage, what you were told, you're borderline, yeah, you can have a facelift if you're well-controlled. But if you're someone on insulin, it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous because you get small vessel disease. And what that translates to, when I lift the skin and pull it tight, the skin may not survive. And if it doesn't survive, that is a bad day for you and a bad day for me. So better not to have it. Remember, no one ever died of jowls. No one ever died of a turkey gobbler in the neck. You know, if you need your gallbladder operated on in the middle of the night, doesn't matter whether you have heart disease, diabetes, or whatever, you have to have it done, right? But not so with cosmetic surgery. So it's really for people who are healthy. Well, anyway, as you look in the mirror at age 50, let's say, you begin to see the changes of aging. And yeah, the aging, first it creeps up on you. You see those first wrinkles around your eyes, you know? And let's say you come into the office and you say, I'm 50. What do I do? I'm starting to look older. So again, I will go through everything from skincare to surgery, and everybody has their own level of comfort. Some people only want non-invasive procedures, and some people only want the surgery. They don't want to be, you know, they don't want to be bothered with little things like Botox and fillers. And you know, I do not try and sway people unless I see something on their face like a pre-malignant thing. Then, of course, I will try and sway. That's a different story. But you know, I've heard so many stories from my patients over the years where they came in for, let's say, eyelid surgery, and the plastic surgeon talked them into a breast augmentation at the same time. It happens, and it's considered unethical. So if your plastic surgeon talks you into something completely unrelated, that's kind of a red flag. It's a warning sign that maybe that's not the surgeon for you. There are some things that are considered okay. So if someone comes into my office and they say, you know, I just don't know what it is that I need. Well, it's a fair thing then to go through, you know, where the anatomical area, if it's the face and the neck, to say, okay, let's start at your forehead and let's look. You've got fine wrinkles. You've got the horizontal lines of your forehead. You've got the vertical lines between your brows. That's from having children and yelling at them all those years, right? Those of you with kids, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So Botox, that's the answer for those. That's the best answer. But what Botox can do, it's a lot of good things, but it can also drop the position of your eyebrows. So your doctor needs to really understand that. He or she needs to examine you with your eyes open and with your eyes closed, because if you relax your forehead with your eyes closed, usually we'll be able to tell the real position of the eyebrows. And a lot of people just hold their eyebrows up because they've got extra skin on their upper eyelids. And it's a very, very important thing for your brain to get as much light in as possible. And so when you do that, you raise your brows, you create wrinkles of your forehead, you get the skin off of your eyelids. And if I Botox you, I could drop the position of your eyebrows. You could look like you have even more skin on your upper eyelids. And yeah, you get rid of those horizontal lines of the forehead, but it might not be a good trade-off. So it's important to have that pointed out to you. And if your doctor doesn't understand that because the two-hour course that he or she took did not explain that, well, that may be a problem. And I see people all the time who come in and they say, well, now I look like a Joker. You know, remember the Joker with the arched brows on the side? That's not good. That's Botox gone bad, or the brows have dropped way too much and you have this sleepy appearance. So it's relatively predictable who will get that, but it requires examination. So Botox is important. It's important. It's the best thing for those horizontal lines and the vertical lines of the forehead and for the crow's feet. I also use it on the bunny lines. You know what those are? The bunny lines are those little lines on the sides of your nose that go at an angle. And when you smile or crinkle your nose, you get the bunny lines. And they're kind of cute when they're early, but then they get deep and not so cute. So we fix those with Botox. And you have to be very careful when we do that area because there's a very important muscle that travels right near those bunny lines. And if I inject a little bit of Botox into that muscle, it's the only muscle, I'll give you a hint, I'm not going to tell you what it is because your eyes will glaze over, but it is the only muscle in the body that has five Latin names to it. So you can look that up later. I'm sure many of you will actually go and try and find that muscle. But there is one, and it lifts up the edge of the nose, and it also lifts up the lip. And if your doctor doesn't quite understand the anatomy, or if your doctor is a nurse doing this, which I don't recommend because of exactly this, then you could wind up having a funny smile at best, an asymmetrical smile, or maybe not a real smile at all because that person has knocked off the muscle for a few weeks or even a few months. So I see and have seen all of these people. They come in and they say, Dr. Perry, can you fix this? And you know, the truth is, some of the things I can fix with Botox if it just requires a little bit more, but a lot of it just requires, you know, letting it wash out, letting it just wear off. And then you come back in a few months and we do it correctly. And so Botox is very valuable. But again, Botox just deals with the muscles of the forehead and around the eyes. It doesn't help the fine contour of the skin. That's skincare. So that's where skincare, even by a plastic surgeon, is very important. Your plastic surgeon needs to examine your skin and understand just what it is. And so most of my patients, what it is in terms of the aging, most of my patients I put on my regimen. Usually, yeah, I'm self-serving, right? But honestly, I created my regimen because I had so many patients come in with this syndrome. And it really is a syndrome. It's a syndrome of a little bit of swelling of the skin, a little bit of redness of the skin, of course, you know, the splotchy pigmentation and wrinkles and rough skin, but also oily skin. And a lot of people just think, well, let's smear on some moisturizer. Moisturizer is the most overused cosmetic product because most women don't need it. And it's very heretical to say that, isn't it? Especially for someone who makes moisturizer. My company makes it, but I'm telling you, you don't need it. And it's really true. Unless you're perimenopausal, meaning a few years before menopause, during menopause, and a few years after, when you have that syndrome that you ladies know exactly what I'm talking about, dry and sometimes itchy skin. And a moisturizer is very helpful at that time. But women, if you're 20 years old, if you're 30 years old, there's really no reason. There really isn't. There's no science to it. And I challenge you to find the papers that say that using moisturizer every day. And I know your grandmother said do this. I know it. All my patients. Oh, my grandmother used cold cream forever and doesn't have a wrinkle. Well, you know what? That's because your grandmother had really good genes and maybe didn't spend a lot of time in the sun. But the moisturizer did not help her. Sorry, because there is no science. In fact, if you use a moisturizer and you do not use a sunscreen, you actually age faster. And the reason for that is your body normally puts a little sheen on your skin. So this is for people who don't use makeup, don't use anything. You get kind of a sheen that causes reflection of the ultraviolet light. And if you put a moisturizer on your skin, you actually reduce that sheen and you get more absorption of the ultraviolet light. So you actually do more damage unless you use sunscreen. You know, if you want moisturizer, I'm not going to try and talk you out of it, but there are moisturizers. The average one has 30 or even 40 different ingredients in it, and the chance of not being allergic to one of those is not high. So you wind up being counterproductive. Anyway, good skincare with things like vitamin C, that's absolutely proven to make a big difference in the skin. It thickens the skin. It generates new collagen. Vitamin C is very good for your skin. You have to put it on at night. Vitamin A, very, very good for your skin. That's any of the what's called retinoids. From Retin-A prescription to retinol in Johnson & Johnson products to retinyl propionate, which is in my product, which is the most difficult retinoid to pronounce. But they all work the same way. Vitamin A is very, very good for your skin. And fruit acids, also very good. You know, the alpha-hydroxy acids, maybe the most important thing about these alpha hydroxy acids, the fruit acids, is that they exfoliate. So they make your skin feel smooth, but that's not the real benefit of exfoliation. The real benefit of exfoliation is allowing, getting rid of the dead cells on the surface of the skin that allows penetration of the really good things, the important things, like vitamin C and vitamin A. You get better penetration of those if you also exfoliate. In the morning, we want to use something like niacinamide, which is really good for your skin. It's very well studied. It actually, niacinamide, there was a study that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine about 4 years ago now, and they showed that taking niacinamide, that's vitamin B3, by the way, niacinamide by mouth or putting it on your skin directly significantly decreases the chance of basal cell carcinomas and squamous cell carcinomas, possibly also melanoma, but we're not sure about that. But certainly niacinamide is a great thing to use on your skin. So those are the things, and sunscreen, of course. That's all you need. Yeah, it sounds like a commercial, but it's really true. You know, you can go into some of these stores, and you know which ones they are. And if you don't walk out of those stores with two shopping bags full of stuff, they're not happy. So they try and sell you on unnecessary products, and they try and sell you on fragmented skincare. And what is that? That's where only one active ingredient, if they put enough in at all, only one active ingredient is present in one product. I like to combine those so you only have one step at night. So skincare, very important. It will decrease wrinkles, yes. It will decrease splotchy pigmentation no matter what your skin color, whether you're very light skin or very dark skin. It doesn't matter. You still need skincare. And also sunscreen, very important. So that is all you need to have the best possible skin. And then we start looking at things like wrinkles and jowls. And after the commercial break, we're going to talk about the procedures that we do. We talk a little about Botox. We're going to talk about what I can do with filler and lasers to make you look better even before going into the operating room. I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. This is What's Your Wrinkle right here on WOR. 800-321-0710 is the phone number. Give me a call. I'll send you home with a bottle of daytime SPF 23 sunscreen. We'll be right back. Ladies, are you looking older than you feel? I'm board-certified plastic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry. Aging is inevitable. We all know that, but I can help you age gracefully. I start with Botox to lessen frown lines, and I use the new Restylane Kiss. What a great name! Give you more kissable lips. No duck lips here. And I smooth the jawline and plump marionette lines with Juvederm. We might remove unsightly blemishes or even reduce splotchiness and rejuvenate the skin with a chemical or laser peel, or I can thicken crepey skin with Ulthera, and for the most dramatic rejuvenation, I perform short scar face and neck lifts. Let's sit down in my Somerset, New Jersey or Beverly Hills offices for an hour consultation and come up with a plan to help you look better. Give me a call at 833-PERRY-MD. That's 833-P-E-R-R-Y-M-D. Check me out on the web at perryplasticsurgery.com. And don't forget to listen to me, Dr. Arthur Perry, every Saturday evening at 6 p.m. right here on WOR.
You're listening to What's Your Wrinkle with Dr. Arthur Perry. What's your wrinkle?
And we're back. This is Dr. Arthur Perry. I'm board-certified plastic surgeon and host of the show for 17 years with my sidekick Noah sitting in the studio. I'm out here in the hills of New Jersey. There really aren't any hills of New Jersey, but we're out here in exile. Looking at the woodchucks in my backyard as they eat all the plants. Well, this is a call-in show. Give me a call. 800-321-0710 is the phone number. 800-321-0710. Tonight, we're talking about what I do to make you look better as you age. And, you know, you don't have to just sit back and let nature take its course. You really don't. You can optimize your appearance at all ages, whether you're 30 and want to do some filler and Botox, and I have plenty of 30-year-olds that do that, or whether you're 80, yeah, if you're healthy, there's no reason why you can't look your best even at 80, and everyone in between. And so I was talking about first skincare, which is important. And skincare can help not only wrinkles and prevent wrinkles and decrease the visibility of wrinkles and actually decrease wrinkles. You know, when we advertise products, you cannot say it decreases wrinkles. You have to say decreases the visibility of wrinkles, because otherwise the FDA calls your product a drug, not skincare, but that gets into the nuances of FDA law. But regardless, good skincare can really make you look better. It can even out your skin tone, decrease wrinkles, the appearance of wrinkles, and it can also decrease, if you use niacinamide, things like basal cell carcinomas and squamous cell carcinomas. It really can. But once you get to the point where you really do have a lot of wrinkles, most people are not satisfied just with skincare. I mean, a lot of people are because a lot of people cannot afford or don't want to go through the process of seeing a plastic surgeon. But you know, many people do. And so you come into the office, we talk about skincare, and then we start looking at what I call the distractions of your face. And what are distractions? They're the things that cause, again, psychologists call it cognitive dissonance. I look at you and I see that mole. It's the first thing that I see on your lip. You haven't seen that mole in 30 years. The reason you haven't seen it, it's been there. Your brain doesn't waste the mental energy looking at the mole every single day. So you kind of look beyond that. But believe me, the first thing that someone new who hasn't seen you before is looking at is that mole on your lip or the mole on your cheek or that giant chickenpox scar right next to your eye. That's what people are looking at, and you don't waste your energy thinking about that. Those things are called distractions, and they're really very simple to take care of, and I call those the biggest bang for your buck procedures in cosmetic surgery, really are the removal of moles and simple scars like that. So in 20, 30, 40 minutes, depending on the size or where it is, I can remove these moles, and sometimes that's all it takes, that and skincare, and you look so much better. So much better. If you've got, a quarter inch mole on the side of your nose, there's nothing pretty about that. You know, Marilyn Monroe drew in her mole. And if you look at pictures, I have a series of 10 pictures of Marilyn Monroe. And by the way, you have to be of the Mr. Ed era to understand who Marilyn Monroe is, because if you're 30, you don't know who she is anymore and you don't know who Mr. Ed is, right? That's my criteria for for an older person, right? So Marilyn Monroe would draw in the mole. And if you look at the series of pictures, she's got it maybe a quarter inch to the side one day and a quarter inch to the side the other day. And it moved all around because it wasn't a real mole. And for God knows what reason, she thought it was pretty. But I don't really think it's pretty, and most people don't think those are pretty. So the way I remove moles as a plastic surgeon is very different from the way a dermatologist or a family practitioner would remove a mole. You know, first of all, we have to put it in the right wrinkle line. And if I can't find a wrinkle line, we put it in the best possible line. And that means the scar has to go along the wrinkle or along a fold or try and be hidden. And if I cross that, and the mark of an amateur doing this is a line, a scar, from taking off a mole that crosses a wrinkle line. And when you smile, it looks worse. It should look better when you smile and eventually fade away. That's my goal. So first of all, we have to position the orientation of the removal of the mole. We have to do that right. And then I have to take it out, of course, with enough margin to get rid of the thing. And, of course, we send everything to a pathologist because there was a study done almost 12 years ago at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston across the street from where I trained. And they looked at something like 20,000 of these things taken off and labeled benign by the dermatologist and plastic surgeon. They were labeled presumed seborrheic keratosis, which is not a mole per se, but a growth on the surface of the skin. And lo and behold, when they looked under the microscope at these 22,000, they found a whole bunch of melanomas. They found a lot of basal cell carcinomas and squamous cell carcinomas, a whole zoo of different things. And what it showed me and showed, you know, the lesson to physicians is that, you know, we can't be 100% by looking at things. I mean, you can certain things like if you've got 40 seborrheic keratoses and they're little, and we're not going to send each one of those little tiny things to pathology, but we want to do the bigger ones. And I always joke with my patients, if it's big enough to have its own zip code, I'm going to send it off to the pathologist and they're going to look under the microscope, even if I'm quite sure it's a seborrheic keratosis. If it's big and funny colored, we'll go ahead and do that. If it's a mole, if it's certainly something suspicious, it goes to pathology. And then what I do, I remove that, I lift up the skin a certain distance, and the distance that comes from my experience, how far I need to lift it up, I need to take the tension off of it. And then I need to close the wound in more than one layer, a layer of dissolving stitches underneath and a very fine layer on the surface. And that's how a plastic surgeon does it. there are dermatologists and others that might just sort of remove it and let it heal in, and then it looks like you have a bullet hole in your face. You don't want that. You know, it might not make a difference on your buttocks, or maybe it does, but certainly on your face, we really want to be careful and want it to look as good as possible. So removal of the distractions, that's the next phase in getting back to a beautiful you, a beautiful face, undoing the damage that time has that has occurred over time, and undoing the damage that sun exposure and maybe cigarette smoking have done. So yeah, we remove moles, we remove scars, and some scars are treated with lasers, and some are treated with fillers, and some are treated with excision, actually cutting them out. So if you have a scar from a bad job done by someone else, or maybe you just fell on the ice when you were 12, we're not going to be able to treat that with a laser, so don't waste your time. We have to excise it, cut it out, and redo it the right way. So, and when I do it as opposed to you know, your kid brother, it usually turns out better. So distractions, that's the next phase. Once we do that, we start thinking of non-invasive procedures. I've already talked about Botox. Filler goes so far in facial rejuvenation, and I do all sorts of different fillers. I was counting the different types of fillers I have in my office this week. I think it's like 8. You know, we've got the Restylane products and the Juvederm products and even Radius, and every situation is a little bit different. And I look at you, and you know, if you have a request, if it's reasonable, we'll do the filler that you want. But most patients are smart enough to let the plastic surgeon choose the filler. That's when I had my hernia done at Columbia, and I told the surgeon how I wanted it done, and he looked at me and he said, no, we should do it endoscopically. And I wanted it under local anesthesia, and he said, no, we'll do it that way. That's the smarter thing. And I would have to be foolish not to listen to the world's expert in hernia surgery. So I did it his way, and that was the right way. And I'm not trying to be arrogant as a surgeon, but you know, a lot of people Google things, or they listen to their friends, and they come in with some idea. I want to use this particular treatment, and we'll discuss it. If it's reasonable, if it's a good alternative, I'll do it. But I'll try and dissuade you if it's not the best treatment. If, on the other hand, you absolutely you want this particular filler or you want that, as long as it's not harmful, well, I'll go ahead and do it for you. All right, so we do fillers, and we approach the wrinkles around the mouth. We fill the lips. I can augment the chin. That means I can make the chin bigger, the cheekbones bigger. I can use filler for those ancillary areas like your earlobes. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. I can actually fill earlobes. You know, they involute as you get older. It's very interesting. Part of it is the pressure of your earrings over time. Part of it is the pressure of your phone against your ear over time. And a lot of it's sun exposure and just your genes. But when you get crinkled up little earlobes, it's hard to keep your earrings straight unless you get these giant diamonds. Then they'll go on anything, right? But, you know, how many people can have these giant ones? You know, you want maybe smaller earrings. And then they turn kind of askew. And you know what I'm talking about. So we can fill the earlobes with some filler. And sometimes the earlobes actually get misshapen and stretched out. And I do a lot of surgery now. In fact, the last year, an awful lot of this earlobe surgery. It's kind of funny. Maybe it's because I talk about it on the radio. But we can take a wedge out of the earlobe and actually make it smaller. So that's different from plumping it up. You still might require filler. But if you've got stretched out earlobes, sometimes we have to do more than one thing. We have to reduce the overall size of the earlobes and then fill the earlobes with some of this Restylane or Juvederm. And sometimes if your earlobes haven't gotten smaller but they're just crinkled, I laser them like I did last week to one of my patients. And the result was, it was actually spectacular. I don't like to use terms like that because, you know, me as a plastic surgeon, I don't overdo things and I don't use a lot of hyperbole, but it was really quite spectacular how they look. So the laser can be used. It's a CO2 laser. It takes 10 minutes, if that, and it's really you're healed in about a week, and it shrinks the earlobes a little bit, and it reduces the wrinkles. So we can rejuvenate the earlobes. Now, what about the nose? The nose is another one of those areas that changes over time and is forgotten by a lot of people. But if you look at your picture when you're 30 and look at your picture when you're 60, you know, a lot of people wind up getting a bulbous tip to their nose. So along with facial rejuvenation, I will address the nose. Now, we're segueing into the invasive procedures, and I don't want to get there yet. We're going to do that right after the break. I want to continue talking about what the laser can do for you. We all know, and I've talked a lot on this show about fillers and the way I reshape lips and rebuild the lips and fill in the nasolabial folds and the marionette lines and can actually smooth your jawline and hide your jowls. And I do a very comprehensive job with the filler. Very different, by the way. When people come into me after having filler by someone else, it's a completely different experience. Besides the fact that I numb you up completely, I try. And I'm about 90, 95% successful in that. This week, I did have someone that I just couldn't numb up. And she tells me, well, at the dentist, it's the same thing. You know, sometimes that happens, but most of the time you're completely numb and you don't feel anything. When I do my 500 injections, which is what I do, 500 or so injections, little tiny injections around the mouth. So certainly filler, yeah, that is a very, very useful part of facial rejuvenation. And then the laser. The laser can, it can really smooth the skin in areas that the filler can't. So if you've got crepey skin, you know, I can't do anything with filler for crepey skin. I can fill wrinkles and I can fill folds, but I can't help the crepey skin, but the laser can. And the CO2 laser I'm using more and more, it's almost, but not quite 100%. It's almost replaced chemical peeling in my practice. I used to love TCA peels, the mid-level peels, but what I can do with a laser is so much more involved than what I can do with TCA peeling, because I can help color of the skin, skin tone with the laser. And if you've got some deep wrinkles and scars, I can treat those deeper. And if you've got some more superficial wrinkles, I can go more superficially. I can use the laser to do everything from basically a facial to removing your skin completely. So the laser is, we don't want to do that. The laser is very, very useful, and I'm doing it, using it more and more. So the non-invasive treatments, you know, it's always funny, right? I mean, sticking a needle in you 500 times, how can we call that non-invasive? But we use that terminology because we're not using a scalpel. We're not putting you under anesthesia, general anesthesia, or sedation to do these minor procedures, these so-called non-invasive procedures. When I return from the break, I'm going to talk then about the surgery we can do. That's the ultimate facial rejuvenation. Facelifts, eyelid lifts, brow lifts, things like that. I'm Dr. Arthur Perry, board-certified plastic surgeon. 800-321-0710 is the phone number. 800-321-0710. We'll be back after these words. Did you know that most skincare is useless, even fraudulent, and often toxic? I'm plastic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry. I needed great skincare for my patients, but really could not find products that dramatically improve skin health. So I went to the books, and I created a line of skincare that reduces the appearance of wrinkles and truly rejuvenates skin. I want everyone to try my products, and so for a limited time, I'm offering my Beauty in a Bottle Nighttime Serum at a great price. Normally, this is $65, but for WOR listeners, it's $40 plus shipping. Nighttime contains vitamin C and A, fruit acids, antioxidants, and skin brighteners. That's all you need for beautiful skin. It's so simple that your friends and relatives will be asking you, what are you doing to look so good? Go to drperrys.com, that's drperrys.com, or give us a call at 844-DR-PERRY. Use the WOR20 code for the discount. To learn more, listen every Saturday evening, 6 p.m., right here on WOR. Ladies, are you looking older than you feel? I'm board-certified plastic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry. Aging is inevitable. We all know that, but I can help you age gracefully. I start with Botox to lessen frown lines, and I use the new Restylane Kiss. What a great name! To, well, you know, give you more kissable lips. No duck lips here. And I smooth the jawline and plump marionette lines with Juvederm. We might remove unsightly blemishes or even reduce splotchiness and rejuvenate the skin with a chemical or laser peel, or I can thicken crepey skin with Ulthera. And for the most dramatic rejuvenation, I perform short scar face and neck lifts. Let's sit down in my Somerset, New Jersey or Beverly Hills offices for an hour consultation and come up with a plan to help you look better. Give me a call at 833-PERRY-MD. That's 833-PERRY-MD. Check me out on the web at perryplasticsurgery.com. And don't forget to listen to me, Dr. Arthur Perry, every Saturday evening at 6 p.m. right here on WOR.
You're listening to What's Your Wrinkle with Dr. Arthur Perry. What's your wrinkle?
And we're back. This is Dr. Arthur Perry, board-certified plastic surgeon, host of What's Your Wrinkle, for a long, long time on these airwaves and hopefully a long time to come. As I've said, I'm a board-certified plastic surgeon. What does that mean? Well, it means that I take care of your appearance from skincare to surgery. And tonight we're talking about facial rejuvenation from skincare to non-invasive procedures to surgical procedures. And yeah, technically a mole removal is considered an invasive procedure, but yeah, it's a minor procedure. You drive yourself to the office, we numb things up, I do the procedure, you drive yourself back. That's kind of a minor procedure. And yeah, it's invasive. Okay, we're making an incision, but pretty non-invasive in the scope of surgery. But what isn't non-invasive is the ultimate in facial rejuvenation, which is called the facelift. And it's really the worst named procedure. And so many people are confused about it. My patients are confused about it. You're confused about it. What is a facelift? What's a neck lift? What's a cheek lift? You know, do they all include brow lifts? What, so, you know, I talked about this last week a bit, but a facelift, a poorly worded procedure, usually requires a cheek lift and a neck lift. That's what it entails, rather. So a facelift is one of the more common procedures that I do. And eventually, if you care about your appearance and want to maintain your appearance, you'll need a facelift. And, you know, we try and stall. And I used to have the attitude that we would stall as long as possible, doing all the non-invasive procedures until it was inevitable. But it turns out that's probably the wrong approach, and it sounds like marketing, doesn't it? But it's, I live with science, and when the publications are very clear that women do better in their long-term appearance if they have a facelift early, well, I listen to that, and I've changed my stance. So now I tend to do facelifts earlier, and I'm doing them even in the 40s, in women in their 40s. In fact, I did a facelift on someone 50 years old. I did her second facelift. And you say, well, oh my God, you know, how many can she have? Well, if it's done right, if you do a facelift right, if I do a facelift right and not overdo it and not do destructive things in a facelift, well, we can lift like Joan Rivers did every few years, every 5 years, every 10 years, whatever it takes to keep you looking as good as possible. Not that you want to keep undergoing the knife, but it depends on how meticulous you are with your appearance. So once we've exhausted what skincare can do, which is the fine contour of the skin, the splotchiness, the fine wrinkles, and once we've exhausted the ability of wrinkle fillers and lasers to get rid of, again, fine wrinkles and to a certain extent some sagging, a little bit of sagging it can help with. Once we've beyond that, we look at you and say, okay, what do we need to do now for the drooping upper eyelids, the fat around the eyes? Yeah, there's only one thing that we can do at that point, and that is an eyelid lift. So the name of an eyelid lift, you know, these are these plastic surgery terms. You'll never remember this, but you'll hear it, you know, talked about. It's called a blepharoplasty, from the Greek word blef, which is eyelid. So blepharoplasty is an eyelid lift. And a lot of people say, well, you know, it's just two eyelids, right? You actually have four eyelids. You have got two upper eyelids and two lower eyelids. And I just don't understand why people don't kind of get that concept. It's not a difficult concept. There are four eyelids, the uppers and the lowers. So sometimes we just fix the uppers, and sometimes we just fix the lowers, but usually we'll do both uppers and lowers. So with the upper eyelids, I look at you very carefully right at eye level. I try and relax the position of your eyebrow. Now, the eyebrows should fall at the bony rim or slightly above in a woman. In a man, they should be at the bony rim. But if you're Nancy Pelosi and you have your eyebrows, you know, halfway up your forehead, that's either an alien appearance, we won't make any judgments there, or your plastic surgeon was just a little too overzealous in lifting the brows, because I personally don't think that's a good appearance, and most people don't. My attitude about plastic surgery, about cosmetic surgery, is to, you know, I want to make you look normal, not unhuman, just normal. And that means I want your brows to be at or just above the position of your bony rim. So, you know, hopefully not when you're driving, but home tonight in the privacy of your bathroom, try and relax your forehead. Try. It's very hard to do, because if you've got a lot of extra skin of your upper lids, it's real hard to get your brows to the right position, but try. And sometimes it just takes your mate in your apartment, in your house, to tell you, you know, close your eyes and relax your brows. Then you can usually do it. Just relax. Sometimes you have to push them down. And then snap a photograph and then snap another one real quick as you open your eyes. And you'll see that your brows will rise in many cases. Now, if you have brows that are below the bony rim, then we're going to do some sort of a brow lift. And I've gone through every different type of brow lift procedure, you know, from the 1980s to now, from making an incision from ear to ear and peeling down your forehead. Sometimes it gets very interesting on the show, right? And your eyes glaze over and some of you just fainted. But that is what's called a bicoronal brow lift, one of the more invasive brow lifts that we used to do. And most people don't do them, although I still see people coming in from other doctors, and there are people doing those. And they're effective procedures, but the problem with that procedure is, by definition, it creates a scar across your scalp, which is not so nice. And a lot of people lose a little bit of hair. And also, it creates a numb area on the top of your scalp, which is very disconcerting when you brush your hair. So I don't like to do those procedures. And then I went through the phase of making the 5 small incisions in your hair and doing an endoscopic brow lift using a scope. Now I'm at the point where I make an incision only on the eyelid. I do it during a eyelid lift. And I do what's called a brow pexy. And I like this operation a lot because it really goes along with my philosophy that you should not look over-operated on. And it's hard to overdo a brow pexy. It's hard to, if you want your brows really high up, it's not the operation for you. But it is the operation if you don't want extra scars. And what I do is I lift the brows right up off the bone, oh my goodness, and then I place some stitches between the brow, the undersurface of the brow, and the bone. I actually place those stitches in the bone, really what's called the periosteum, which is the tissue just on top of the bone. And I position the brows at an appropriate level, and that's based on my aesthetic judgment, right? So what's an appropriate level? Well, a plastic surgeon knows what the appropriate level is. And then I remove upper eyelid skin. And it's important that the doctor knows exactly what he or she is doing, because if first you remove the eyelid skin, then you position the brow, you've got a potential problem, unless you know exactly what you're doing. And most of us do know exactly what we're doing because we're trained to do this in our residency, which is 6 years long, and we're certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery. That's the surgeon that you want to go to, right? So we do a brow lift. We do an upper eyelid lift and remove just the right amount of skin. And here's the word for you, a judicious amount of fat. And what does that mean? That's the hardest part to teach a resident. It really is. The aesthetic judgment of how much fat and how much skin to remove in an eyelid lift, very difficult to teach because it's artistry. Artistry is tough to teach. So is ethics. You know, your mother teaches you ethics, and artistry is largely innate but learned the hard way. You know, it really is. It's, you know, artists learn particular techniques, and plastic surgeons learn particular techniques. And it's very difficult for the new plastic surgeon to know just how much to take, because you can take a lot of fat and give someone a sunken in appearance, and you have performed the operation perfectly from a technical standpoint, but miserably from an artistic standpoint. And that is what separates the artists in plastic surgery from the non-artists. And, you know, it's tough to teach that. So it's just the right amount of fat, just the right amount of skin is removed. And that's an eyelid lift, both from the upper lid and the lower lid. And then we move to the face. And a facelift is a very artistic operation also. It's very easy to remove too much. It's very easy to distort the features. Just think of some of those ladies in Hollywood that you see on TV and you say, oh my goodness, you know, I mean, with all their money, could they not afford a really good plastic surgeon? Well, it's not about that. It's about just their judgment and who they're getting. And maybe at that cocktail party they went to, they heard the name of this guy, this woman, and they said, I'm going to that doctor. Well, they forgot that the reason they heard that name is because they had a good public relations agent. Yeah, that happens. So anyway, that's why people get somewhat not perfect plastic surgery. And it happens all the time. It happens with non-invasives, and it happens with facelifts. So when I remove skin in a facelift, it's very important to understand exactly what's happening to the face, not to remove too much, and to do it just right. It's really the Goldilocks principle in cosmetic surgery. Not too much, not too little, just enough. And we want to position the jowls appropriately. We want to get rid of that extra skin and fat of the neck and the bands of the neck and do it just perfectly and hide the scars in a short scar facelift so that when you get out of the shower, when you get out of the pool, you do not see the incisions. That's the goal. Well, you know, we go through these shows. It's never enough time. I wish I had 2 hours. Maybe someday I will. But for now, it's an hour. I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. You've been listening to What's Your Wrinkle right here on WOR. You can check out me, my Facebook page. My facelift page, that's a good one, right? Facebook.com/Dr. Arthur Perry. Check that out. If you're interested in the products, you go to drperrys.com. That's drperrys.com. And I didn't even mention that we're still honoring the Father's Day special. It's Father's Day 2021. Father's Day 2021 is the code. I'm sorry. It's Father's Day 21, not 2021. Father's Day 21. You get 20% off all the products. All the products, even the moisturizer that you do not need, you get 20% off. And once again, the website is perryplasticsurgery.com to learn more about me. Give my office a call to make an appointment, 732-422-9600, 732-422-9600. And we do try and update the website. The web guy is working on those. I know people call me and they say, yeah, some of those links to the videos on the Dr. Oz show not working right now. We're working on that because the Dr. Oz show seems to change the URL of those videos. But you can go and you can check out. If you want to see something really funny, check me out removing Jimmy Fallon's mole in the Dr. Oz show. That was one of my favorite ones. You just Google me, Jimmy Fallon, Dr. Oz, and you'll see something really funny. Okay, Noah says, get out of the studio. I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. We'll be back 6 p.m. next week, broadcasting live from probably Long Island. And thank you so much, Noah. We'll see everybody next week. Bye-bye now.